Today on Shaping Special Hearts, we're talking about curriculum. It's the theme this month on CM Connect because we know that this is the time of year that we're checking out curriculum, making plans for fall, looking at our numbers, figuring out how many precious souls are going to be in each age group, and planning accordingly. So we're taking some time during this month to think about curriculum in general and also to think about curriculum from a special needs point of view. And the lens we are viewing that through today is about just making adaptations, ways that you make adaptations to curriculum. And we're going to kind of do it in a backwards way, as is my general tradition in life, to back into things, at a look inside a curriculum writer's brain and how they think and how they make adaptations to their own resource as they are writing, and then how they may make adaptations to their very own resource when they're done writing it. We're trying to give you guys permission here to make adaptations. And with me today, I have Amy Dolan from Lemon Lime Kids joining me from Chicago, Illinois. You still there, Amy?
Hi, Vanjie. It's so good to be on with you today.
Amy has a host of curriculum writing experience, and she is going to be our voice of experience in giving us permission to make some adaptations for all kinds of children today. And it's my prayer and Amy's as well that we're empowering you and equipping you to make the changes you need for the special needs child, as well as the child who might not be special needs, but is just going through something requiring some special adaptation. So I'm going to interview Amy here a little bit and give you guys a little bit of background on Amy and her amazing credentials, and I'm going to let her do that. So, Amy, you and I kind of got connected through a slew of people who said, if you want to talk about curriculum, you got to talk to Amy Dolan, and you were kind enough to communicate with a total stranger via email. But I'd like for you to tell people how you got started in ministry, what that ministry experience wound up being, and what you're doing now as far as curriculum writing. Can you give us that?
Absolutely. I'd love to. And again, thank you so much for having me on today, especially to talk about curriculum, my favorite topic, and specifically how to adapt and tweak and edit curriculum. There's nothing better for me to, you know, spend my Tuesday afternoon doing, so this is great. So I've had some experience writing curriculum. I actually started, my very first curriculum job was at Willow Creek Church here in Illinois. I was a curriculum writer for the Promised Land Ministry. And, you know, I feel like, as all things in life, it was a crazy fluke. That's how it felt like to me, a crazy fluke. Probably.
So
like
you also back into things.
Yeah, right? I feel like I just, like, accidentally find myself in certain situations. And, you know, I thank God for them. I figure they're not mistakes, but they feel like mistakes to me often. But my family had attended Willow Creek for a long time, and I volunteered in the Promised Land Ministry. And when I went to college, I really knew that children's ministry was what I wanted to do. And so the folks at Promised Land were kind enough to give me a summer internship during college where I actually wrote curriculum for the four- and five-year-old room. And I had never written curriculum before. I was a college student, and I had never even really interacted with a 4- or 5-year-old before. And so it was, you know, kind of risky on their part. But I said yes, and I had this really magical summer writing curriculum for 4- and 5-year-olds. I would write it during the week, and I was mentored by the fabulous Pat Simo and Sue Miller and the Promised Land team. They would mentor me during the week on how to write, and then on the weekends I would actually teach what I wrote to the kids. And it was such a magical summer because I just fell in love with that age group of kids, and I got a chance to explore curriculum writing, something I never thought I would do or find myself in, and it was really wonderful. And so really from that year in college, I was hooked, and I continued to work at Promised Land after I graduated college. I worked there for 6 years, writing curriculum and teaching it every weekend. Then I went on to lead some other children's ministries and continue to write curriculum for various companies. And now I get to work on Phil Vischer's project, What's in the Bible, where we're writing curriculum that's taking children through the entire Bible and at the same time teaching them how the Bible came to be. So it's a biblical literacy curriculum that we're super proud of. But I still find myself writing curriculum and writing it in a way that I like to write curriculum so that it gives children's leaders a starting place. Because I know it's crazy. None of us have time when we're leading ministries to actually spend the time writing the curriculum from scratch. It's a lot of energy, you know, to think of the ideas and scope out the sequence of it and put all the activities together and then make it just perfect for the kids who might have special needs or special requirements in our classrooms. So when I'm writing curriculum, I really get excited thinking about how I'm just providing a starting place for children's leaders. Here are some ideas. Here's a thoughtful sequence. Here's a way to tell the stories. It's almost a starting place or a suggestion that then children's leaders can take and say, great, thank you for the starting place. Now I'm going to really make it just perfect for my kids. And when I think about that process when I'm writing, it really fills me up and gets me excited that children's leaders can take what I've done and make it better than I mean, I never could have made it that good for their own kids. And I really love that.
I appreciate the spirit of humility with which you enter the writing process. I'm working on some curriculum adaptations right now. They're going to take us into next summer. And I'm thinking the whole time, God, just let me be writing the thing that goes into someone's hands in just the way where then they can take it and change it. Because
that's right.
They're going to need to take it and change it. I know that you do some consulting, as do I, and one of the things that I say that I'm almost positive that you do is a lot of what we do is dictated by something as simple as the dimensions of the classroom we're given. Some of it's just architecture, you know. There's a lot of things we open up a curriculum and even something as distant in our minds as architecture or the number of kids that came that day or whether or not the AC goes out in a part of the building or anything like that affect how something is taught off of a page. What kind of adaptations either have you made to existing curriculum? I mean, just some really quick things that you can think of, or do you find yourself hoping that a children's minister would realize they had the liberty to make either something you've done yourself or things that you think are automatic as far as adaptation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. That's such a great question. Simply based on even what you just said, you know, everyone is has certain limitations and challenges for their own ministry context. Like you said, whether it's the architecture or the class size or the time, you know, the time that you have to be with the children. So to me, that's why I always like to say, like, you just have to assume adaptations when you're a children's leader. I just think even as wonderful as, you know, all the curriculum is that exists, there is none that's perfect, absolutely perfect. You can take out of the box and teach on Sunday for your kids. I just really believe that. And so I think you have to assume adaptations regardless, even if it's a tiny little thing like, you know, photocopying the paper in a different way or, you know, something like that. But
yes.
I think you have to just assume there will be some level of adaptations or edits for your context. So for me, in the past, as I've led ministries, I usually start with just even the time frame that we have. You know, do we have 60 minutes on Sunday morning with the kids? Okay, well, most of the curriculum I've bought gives me far more activities than 60 minutes allows on a Sunday morning. So that's great. I'd always rather have more activity options than less. But I can't hand a 20-page curriculum lesson to my volunteers. So that's usually where I start even in adaptations is saying, how much time do we have? this Sunday, and how many activities, how long do I think the activities in this particular lesson are going to last? And normally I wind up deleting several of the activities just for time's sake, even as we start. Now, I know they're always there if we need them, or there's there's going to be extra time, or the pastor's going to run long, that sort of thing. But I usually start by even just deleting, getting rid of the extra stuff, anything extra, because I just want to give my volunteers the simplest lesson plan I can. I don't want to confuse them. I don't want to give them too much. I want to give them the simplest lesson plan I can. So I usually start there. From there, I go and the activities then that I've chosen, I go through usually and make some edits to make sure they're age appropriate for the classrooms I'm going to use them for. And, you know, of course, publishers and curriculum writers spend a lot of time working on that. But sometimes I find the activities, you know, maybe just need a little tweaking older or a little tweaking younger based on my specific group of kids. You know, maybe we have kindergartners who literally just been promoted to kindergarten, and so the kindergarten activities are feeling just a little old for this time right now. That's no problem. I can edit them. I can change the activity in a way so that it's just a little tiny bit younger than it was originally written. That doesn't mean I'm changing the activity or I'm adding supplies. It just means I'm making a tweak so that it's a little bit simpler for them. Usually after I do those things, then the last thing I'll do is just go through and see if there are any edits I need to make theology-wise or church value-wise. Again, curriculum writers and publishers do such a good job of writing from a solid theological perspective, but everyone, every church, every denomination, every community, right, has different theological perspectives. And so if there's a way that I can, I'm not going to change the lesson. I'm not going to change the key concept. I'm not going to change the Bible story. I'm going to change just the little nuances. Maybe there's like just two or three words in a sentence that aren't really the words we use to communicate that thought. Well, that's no problem. I can still get across the exact same intended purpose, but use the two or three words that are familiar to my church community. So those are the basic things I usually do. I've done in the past, even when editing my own curriculum or, you know, editing another published curriculum that I bought for my church.
I especially like the language you said about a little tweak, just a little tweak.
Yeah.
I'm probably famous by now in saying that it's small 2 and 3 degree changes, even with children that are developing atypically, or for that matter, may be going through a time in their life where they will, and I hope everyone can hear this term with grace, may have an emotional handicap and for a season of time. And what I mean by that is you have a child in your ministry going through a season of divorce, and they are having some behaviors they are displaying during that time that are atypical for that child and that are new because they're going through something. Or occasionally I've had foster children going through lots of ups and downs that were parts of my ministry. So there's all kind of special needs, more than just neurological things, which, you know, definitely is the focus of this show. However, I want to pull back and zoom out a little bit today to those little tweaks that you make. And I heard you saying you look at the age of the children. The illustration about kindergartners is outstanding because I don't know of a group of people that changes more between September and Christmas than kindergartners. You
That's
could
right.
almost use just a totally different age level.
between you really could.
Between that time and even when Christmas rolls around. And I found even when I worked in the school setting, teachers that had graduated kindergartners in May would come back in August and say, "What is wrong with these kids?" Oh, yeah, that's right. It's August. It's not May. I can't expect them to be doing what the group was doing at the end of the year before. So you talking about where they are developmentally is a great springboard for me because children that are have some kind of developmental delay through a disability, And that could be autism, which is a little bit more where my area of concentration is, because my son was diagnosed at 3 with autism, or Down syndrome, any basic thing we could find, developmental disorder, is mean there's going to be a delay. Now, one of the things about delay means if you've been in the airport and your flight is delayed, that doesn't necessarily mean it's not going to get there. It just means it's going mm-hmm. to take longer. And a lot of times when we hear developmental delay, we automatically panic a little bit and say, oh, they're not going to be able to do this at all. That's when I appreciated what you said about little tweak, is that in those instances, with those developmental delays, instead of saying that is a handicap that they're completely not going to be able to do, maybe a way to approach that is just to think 6 months, a year younger, especially in areas of fine motor, like scissor skills, mm-hmm. anything that's requiring cutting, writing, drawing. That's where you'll see it really, really stand out, especially in that preschool age. Younger preschoolers, it can manifest itself in not knowing or being able to sit or being able to attend. Of course, I have to also say you see that with a lot of typically developing children as well. Mm-hmm. Some of that depends on how much exposure they've had to a classroom environment. But I hear you saying little tweaks, and I'm all about those small things that you can do when you're looking at developmentally what age they are. Are there some hallmarks for developmental age things that you especially looked at in that early childhood age range as you wrote mm-hmm. and everything? Because there's a lot of things that go into that age range curriculum-wise that often they're asked to do. What are some mm-hmm. skill areas that you can see in curriculum or that you think about in curriculum, Amy, as you think about that age range, that 4, 5, and 6 age range?
Yeah, it's such a special, wonderful time. You know, like you said, the kindergartners who are, you know, learning and growing so much, I found that to be true in the 4 and 5 year olds too, the difference between a 4 year old who just walked into the classroom versus a 5 year old who was leaving to go to kindergarten was incredible. But to me, the biggest things to notice, I think, in that age curriculum are what you mentioned, the fine motor and the large motor skills. I find sometimes in curriculum, I think sometimes with that age group, we tend to lean towards the crafts, and we tend to lean towards, smaller activities where they're sitting in a circle or they're sitting on a carpet or they're doing something with paper or beads or scissors or, you know, some kind mm-hmm. of craft activity sort of thing, which I think is great. But you really have those fine motor skills are just, some kids have got them right away and some kids take a really long time to master them. And so I think it's important to look at your curriculum and have a variety of activities. So if you're offering a fine motor activity for that age, make sure at the same time you're offering a large motor activity option, or not at the same time, sometime during the day, you know, mm-hmm. where a child is.
Yes.
Running or throwing or building blocks or something like that, so that it's not all one type of activity, you know, so that if the children who haven't quite mastered that yet or are just on the beginning of it and are still feeling frustrated or still learning, that's not the only type of activity you have, so that they disconnect and disengage and aren't able to connect with the lesson because they feel like their skills don't match what's needed. That's really important, I think, especially when it comes to the fine motor and the smaller type activities with the 4 and 5 year olds. Have a wide variety of activities. We in Promise Land we had stations at the beginning, so children could choose what they wanted to do. If they wanted to sit quietly and read books in a corner, if they wanted to make a craft or an art, they could. If they wanted to, you know, build, if they wanted to. We had some of those like lacing books if they wanted to practice lacing or tying. And I really like that idea that children can choose, you know, all of the activities match the lesson or all of the activities have a relational purpose to them. So it doesn't matter what the children choose. And if they only choose the books every single week, that's okay. You know, they're connected to that activity and they're able to do it. So I think having a period of time also in your classroom where it's more free play with purpose, children can have opportunity to choose their activities and find success and connection to the lesson by choosing the activity that matches, you know, what they're doing.
I like what you said about success. We want church to be a safe place for them, and we want church to be a successful place for them where they have developed relationships and they feel like if I belong anywhere, it's in the house of God. I've been made in his image. I belong. And when they feel like their skills don't match, like you said, the content of what's going on, there can become a very real disconnect for them that says, maybe I don't belong here. And to them, it may appear everyone else can do what's happening. And that may not be true. But in their mind, there may be a panic. There's a wonderful children's book. I don't know the author, but I do know the title that I used to use a lot for preschool age, and it's called Leo the Late Bloomer. Leo the Late Bloomer. And it's a picture book about a little lion named Leo who was just late in being able to do things. And it does address fine motor skills, and he couldn't color, and he couldn't cut, and he couldn't paste. And that's kind of the job description for a, you know, 4- and 5-year-old, color, cut, and paste. If you can't do that, I'm not sure I can help you. You know, that sometimes is what we have in front of us. And I think what you said about the stations, one of the principles that I use and I try to write, and I'm finding myself struggling in writing this to instruct volunteers, is one of the ways you can help determine their success is by you getting to know the child. On an individual basis. And I had a ministry on the larger end of medium, and there were some kids that we had so many every week I would struggle with knowing their name. But from a special needs point of view, the success that I saw in my son's life was people that got to know him and made themselves attentive to what he could do and what he gravitated towards, and they tended to teach him that way. They used his area of strength to be a springboard for instruction. And what you said about some kind of a center approach or an open play approach, because realistically, there is a period of time where you're waiting on everyone to get there anyway. Practically, you know, there'll be some space where you need to have some intake things going on, and that one thing of having those multiple areas open, for anyone listening is thinking about a child's special needs and you just haven't quite found their sweet spot yet, if you can try that approach, they'll gravitate toward their strength, the things they're comfortable with. And then, I don't mean to oversimplify, but really, that gives you a great open door for saying, okay, what kind of things can this child do? What kind of things are they drawn toward? And how can I use that later? Even if their fine motor is a little bit delayed, but my goodness, they have great large motor skills, and they may be the child that runs into class, you know.
So we say,
they're running, you know. But there's something behind that. There's an underlying neurology, I guess what I'm trying to say, especially in a child that is delayed. And multisensory curriculum is fabulous. I'm a huge proponent of it. Something that's going to teach to all the senses. I think it's good pedagogy. But in a child that's a little bit developmentally delayed, whether they have a diagnosis yet or not, which that's the other piece for early childhood, is that a lot of times before school age, they're not going to be diagnosed. And they may just get labeled as they have aberrant behaviors. They can't sit, or they can't, or they resist, and it looks like stubborn willfulness, when really it may be a delay that they can't. So if you'll provide a lot of different activities that reach the senses, that is another way that you can kind of make yourself a detective of that child's needs and of their behavior. My son was going to be one that was going to – do you agree? I mean, does that make sense, Amy?
Oh, I love what you just said, Vanjie, about being a detective of child behavior. I love that. I'm going to steal that and start saying
You go
that.
Right ahead. There's no such thing as an original
thank
idea.
You. I love that. And, I mean, obviously for the special needs children in your classroom, you have to be that. But for all the children in your children's
yes.
ministry, you should be a detective of who they are, the faith experience they're having, how they connect with God, what their family is like, what their family situation is like. And the more, obviously, the more you know about each child, the more you make it your mission to be a detective and figure out who that kid is and what their family life is like, the better you can tweak all of your activities, the better you can tweak even how you're training your volunteers so that they can connect with that child in a very personal and custom way. And I'm going to take that, be a detective of your children.
Oh, you go right ahead. I talked to a woman on the phone not too long ago that had connected with me through the website, and she has a grandchild that's four, whose name is Noah. So that's my son's name. We kind of had a kindred mm-hmm. thing going on, and he's nonverbal at four, which my son was nonverbal at four. And she mentioned the most interesting thing to me that just reinforced to me being a behavior detective. And this is just a very simple example. She was talking about what a hard time her grandson had connecting at school and at church, as they had realized the pattern that he had was that women of a certain age that wore glasses, he tended to bond with them. Well, don't you know his grandmother is his caregiver? Mm. And she wears
That's
glasses.
Great.
And for him, there was something of a comfort level just in the physical persona of who she was that brought a comfort level to him. And I thought, wow, you just don't ever know what it's going
right.
to be, what they're going through inside and neurologically. And that's why I kind of use that detective. I'm hesitant to use it. I never want to panic people that this is so difficult and so hard because I look at it as a friendship. You know, Amy, you and I are more acquaintances, but if you and I had been close friends for a prolonged period of time, in becoming your friend, I never would have said, well, I have to understand everything about Amy, everything about her past, and I have to make a plan for every eventuality, for every situation Amy may be in her life mm-hmm. in order for me to be able to communicate with her and be her friend. That's not the mm-hmm. way we look at friendship, is it?
That's right.
It's ongoing, and it's evolving, and I watch you, and I see what you're going through, and I learn what you like, and we build common ground on what you like. It's very, very much the same thing. Especially mm-hmm. in a ministry context. I know that in therapy context and everything, there's much more expertise that goes into it. But what we're looking at is making sure a child knows they've been made in the image of God. And I just mm-hmm. believe he equipped us to do that. I don't believe
yes.
it would have been so complicated
yes.
we couldn't.
Yes, and especially when he calls us to our specific ministries, I really believe that if God has called you as the leader, he has then equipped you. I don't believe that God calls us to certain ministries and certain roles and then just abandons us. You know, he calls us for a purpose and then he equips us for that specific role, that specific ministry. And so whoever the children are that you're serving, that he's called you to, he's going to help you and guide you and give you the talents and the gifts and the wisdom that you need to do that the best you can. And I feel like even I sometimes act like that, like I'm so connected when God calls me to something, but then I worry and panic once I'm there and I feel like I can't do it right. I totally act like he led me and it was wonderful, but then left me after that. He abandoned me after that, and I just... We can't think like that. God calls us and then gives us exactly what we need to reach the children he's called us to.
Absolutely. I had a professor who, his favorite expression was, I'm kind of building this jet as I'm flying it, which was his way of saying, I'm kind of making this up as I go along. And we want to have such I'm not by nature, by personality, I am a planner. I like to have a schedule. It drives my husband up the wall and back down again often. I want to have a schedule and know what we're going to do, but there is a very beautiful element to leaving space for God, for allowing him to have a little bit of room to direct. And when Noah, I started in children's ministry when he was about 2.5, and he was formally diagnosed at 3, and it was just, the classroom was a nightmare for him, and Sundays and Wednesdays were a nightmare for me. And one of the people that I saw that really said, well, I think he can do more. It's just the way this thing is playing out on a practical level, was actually a 14-year-old boy who was a youth assistant.
Wow.
And I had begged him as a personal favor, because his mom was one of my best friends, to come in and be a youth assistant in that classroom. And he came in after 4 weeks, and I said, I need you 2 more weeks. I promise I'll bake you a cake. I'll make you cookies. I'll work out something. He goes, I was going to actually ask Miss Vanjie if I could stay. He said, I think he can do way more than everybody thinks he can. Everybody just hadn't figured out what's setting him off yet. But if you just watch him, it's really evident. And his name's Jeffrey. And one of the things that Jeffrey did was, in that 14-year-old innocence and just wanting to get to be Noah's friend, he learned to learn Noah. He didn't have a ton of plans. And by him doing that, that 14-year-old boy really led the direction of an entire ministry to lots of children with special needs kids. Wasn't a complex design, but it allowed a lot of room for God. Does that make sense, Amy?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. You've got to leave room for God, because his ways are mysterious, and often his plans are unknown to us, just like you said. I mean, that was, you could never have planned for what had happened, and when we don't allow for God to do that, we miss out on those things. That's the greatest, I've been saying this lately, I think the greatest adventure of being a Christian is following God every day and watching his plans unfold themselves, because it's so surprising often the way his plans move, and it's so wonderful often. There's so much joy found in watching God's unexpected plans unfold. And I don't seem to have the same joy when I make all the plans and the plans unfold. It's like, well, then it went according to plan.
Absolutely. And there are things years later. I'm working on some adaptations for 2014 Vacation Bible School. So it's, I don't even know what month it is. You know, I'm working so far ahead on some things. And this morning I was doing some writing and trying to explain kind of how a buddy system can work. And I was reflecting on something that at the time I thought was a complete tragedy. And that was that my son had to be taken out of the classroom. Because he couldn't handle it, and we had to have a special place where he could go and take a break. And at the time, for me, that felt like failure. And I had the name of this faithful volunteer who carried him around and who got to know him scrawled at the top of my notes, and me realizing, you know, at the time, that didn't look like success to me. Now I'm trying to figure out how in the world to write it down so that everyone can take that approach.
Right. Can you even imagine that? Yeah.
Yeah. At the time, it never would have occurred to me that that was what success looked like. But, you know, the cross, the day Jesus died, looked like the biggest failure of all time. It was 3 days later at a resurrection that there was hope. And I certainly don't want to oversimplify special needs ministry or children's ministry or curriculum by any means. But there's something to that openness and that obedience that we hold things so tightly in our hands to kind of turn loose a little bit in controlled ways. Again, I think your idea of the center approach at the very beginning just loosens that
those tight fists a little bit to say, let it be a little bit open to allowing kids to steer themselves in a certain direction and to let us learn from them. Let us learn from them. So that I'm really, really happy about that part of the conversation. While I'm thinking about it, listeners, I have a couple of resources for sensory education for you guys. I've talked about that a lot. When I found looking at curriculum that my son was unable to engage in certain sensory activities, I began to want to understand more about that. And since then, a lot of researchers have said that taking a sensory-sensitive approach is one of the best ways we can make adaptations and also prevent some meltdowns and some behavior triggers that happen. So what I did was I talked to my senior minister into letting me go to an occupational therapy conference and signing up.
That's a great idea.
He was wonderful to me, and he just said, if you think you can learn things about children's nervous system, glory to God, go ahead and go. But one of the things that I've done is make myself a little bit educated about that. So the name of a great book to start with is called The Out of Sync Child. Out of Sync is hyphenated, O-U-T hyphen of hyphen S-Y-N-C, The Out of Sync Child. And the author's name is Carol Kranowitz. That's K-R-A-N-O-W-I-T-Z. The Out of Sync Child is a book that explains a lot about sensory integration dysfunction and sensory processing disorder, and it'll give you a really quick neurology lesson. Then she wrote some companion books called The Out of Sync Child Has Fun and 101 Activities for Kids in Tight Spaces. And oftentimes when I write, I refer to some of these resources and say, okay, sensory-wise, if I know a child is sensitive in this area or that they have problems with fine motor, I look at that for making adaptations. So I wanted to mention those resources to you guys. They are not sacred resources. They are not church curriculum resources. They're secular occupational therapy things with just tips that I looked at as I was making adaptations. So I want to let you guys know about that, and I will try to post something on my website, a link to those books also, if you didn't get me shouting that out really, really quick. Amy, I want to ask you what advice you have for children's ministers who are using a curriculum and maybe sensing some kind of a frustration and feeling that it needs an adaptation. If you could be there with them in those moments of frustration, what would you tell them that we haven't said already today?
Well, I would say first, your frustration is awesome, and you should take note of that.
Praise the Lord.
I mean, frustration is a good thing to recognize and a good thing to feel because it means you wish for something different that's not happening, right? You're finding conflict
yes.
in not getting or meeting the expectations that you want. And so that's great. I would be thrilled if children's leaders are frustrated that their curriculum needs something different. And I would say go with that frustration and let that frustration motivate you to make the changes. I think, like I said before, I always assume adaptions, and I like to say that children's leaders are my editor. You know, if I'm the curriculum writer, to me, the children's leaders are the ultimate editor. And I would love if more and more children's leaders thought of themselves that way. I'm the editor of this curriculum that I just purchased, which means I get the final say in how this actually is implemented in my church. You know, the editor gets the final say in making the tweaks and changing the language and making suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And so for children's leaders to think of themselves as the final editor, I think, is a really great thing. And I would just say, if I were with all of them in that frustration, I would say you're the expert of this community of children. You're the expert. God called you to this, and you know them better than any curriculum and publisher ever will. You know their nuances, their uniquenesses. You know the community of faith. You know the theology. You know what's going on in your community right now. Are you going through a hard time or a loss? Or is it the time of growth and celebration? You know, all of those things affect children in your community. You know, I live in Chicago where we have, where violence is a really big deal. And that I can't pretend that doesn't affect the children in my church. So a curriculum isn't always going to be perfect for my children because the publisher didn't maybe account for the violence we experienced that week. Well, of course not. That's my job as the children's leader, right? You're going to be the expert. So I would say go with your frustration, be motivated, assume assumptions, and then make as many tweaks as you can. You know, obviously don't spend all of your time rewriting the curriculum. If you're spending the majority of your weeks making the tweaks and rewriting, well, then maybe I'd suggest you should just write your own curriculum from the start, which is a great option too. But if you're making adaptions and you're making tweaks during the week and they're simple enough, they're small changes, and they're changes that are really going to be right for your kids, then you've got to do that. You've got to assume that. And I'd say you've got to plan for some of that time even during your week. You know, plan for time at the beginning of the week to review the curriculum you've got coming up. I like to look at curriculum for a whole month at a time so that I can see how every lesson flows together, what a kid's full experience would be if they came every single Sunday in a month. So take time at the beginning of a month or the middle of a month to look through the entire month. Make the adaptions for the children based on what season it is. You know, is it late in the school year? Is it the beginning of the school year? Is it a rowdy group of first graders? Is it mostly boys in your second grade? That's the thing. Sometimes our activity, even as curriculum writers and publishers, we write activities sometimes that are more geared towards boys typically or more geared towards girls typically. And if you've got more boys in your second grade classroom right now, then figure out the best activities you can use to connect with those boys. And discard and delete or save the other activities for another time. So you've got to assume adaptions. You've got to go with your frustration. Let it motivate you and spend time. Don't spend all of your time, but spend time reviewing the curriculum as a whole and really thinking, being reflective on who the children are in your classrooms right now in this season, what the families are going through in this season, and make the changes. You know, if your community of faith is experiencing a loss, a really great loss of someone in the church, well, then it probably isn't right for an upcoming Sunday to just do the curriculum as planned. You maybe want to make adaptions so that maybe the activities are quieter or more reflective. Maybe there's more time for quiet prayer, for children to be in prayer for whatever has happened. You want to adapt the lesson so that the teacher can communicate and address the children concerning the loss in an appropriate way. So you really want to make sure you're taking time to think about what's going on for the children in your community and the families in your community and then making those tweaks accordingly.
And I think that statement is completely transferable to children with a special need or a developmental disability. Children with a delay are going to change. They're not going to stay at that one stage for always. They're going to move past that. There are certain times of the year when you can connect with a parent. Usually if they are school age and they have a special need, they are included in some kind of a special education program, there will be a meeting at the very beginning of the year that sets that child's goals for the school year. If you're a partner with that parent, it's a wonderful time for you to stop and say, first of all, how was your IEP meeting? One of the most precious things that ever happened to me was a volunteer coming to minister to me and saying, hey, let's ride over and park in the parking lot of the school the night before the IEP meeting and have a prayer, which is
yeah, sounds.
It was someone ministering to me when I was the minister saying, I know you're ready, you're getting ready to set goals. That's a great time at the beginning of the school year. So, you know, what goals are being set? What kind of things are you hoping and wishing are going to happen during the school year? So for children with special needs, you can ask about that and look at that and then use that information to help you think about that child's classroom environment for fall. That's just something that will be coming up very quickly for parents. You know, as they get into the holiday season, oftentimes holidays throw a whole new monkey wrench into the schedule and any kind of plan that they have. There's a lot of extra sensory things that happen. You can connect with them then, staying connected with them, and like Amy said, getting to know them and what's going on through the year. It may seem an oversimplified approach, but I think it's one that everyone can use, and that's why I take it. You don't have to have a degree in special education to find out the best way for a child to learn and to partner with them and to teach them that they've been made in God's image. As Amy has so aptly said, we've been called. And those children that are there that are coming to you, God has sent to put into your hands. And there's no one who has felt less equipped to care for a special needs child than I did. Buddy slept in my front bedroom, and I was terrified he wouldn't know the Lord. And God is faithful to us, and he will meet you where you are, and you will not be alone in your quest to get to know them. Amy, I just can't thank you enough for all of your insight today. I'd like to let people know what kind of projects you're working on and give them your contact information so they can know more about you and what you do. And can you tell us some about Lemon Lime Kids?
Oh, of course. And Vanji, it's been such a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you for the invitation, and thank you for discussing this really important topic. I'm grateful for the work that you do. I'll be checking out those books you mentioned, too. Those sound fantastic. Thank you for those.
Great.
Yeah, so I have a consulting company called Lemon Lime Kids. You can find us online at lemonlimekids.com. And I offer children's ministry consulting, usually a one-on-one coaching for the children's ministry leader in a church. And it's my most favorite thing to do. I just love children's leaders, and I love when they call and have a problem or are finding their ministries growing and need to grow their leadership skills in order to match it. I just love it. So I offer consulting for a period of time, you know, one-on-one with children's leaders to help bring new strategy or solve problems or things like that. And then along with that, I also do the curriculum. Like I told you, I work with Phil Vischer and his project, What's in the Bible. It's a curriculum for children in grades 1 through 4, Sunday morning biblical literacy curriculum. We have a brand new website you should check out at whatsinthebible.com. And it's really fantastic. Your kids can watch some of the videos. You can download the lessons from there. We offer the curriculum in a digital format, so you can teach it right from your iPad if you want. And of course, it's customizable, so you can make all the changes you'd like.
Yes.
You can do anything you want to the work we've done. That's the majority of my work, but like I said, you can find me online at lemonlimekids.com. I blog a couple times a week about different projects I'm working on or thoughts I'm having. I love to tweet about children's ministries, so you can find me on Twitter at @adolan. And I really, really love collaborating. I love working on projects with others, and I love working with friends to encourage children's leaders and promote fresh ideas for really ministering to children in various contexts. So I love when someone emails or calls and has a project idea or wants to collaborate or, you know, thought of me for something. I love that. So if at any point you'd like to, you know, anyone listening would like to reach out, you've got a project idea or want to collaborate on something, I'd love it. Send an email or find me on Twitter. It'd be great.